Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, AA meeting on air. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Steve.
We'll start our meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve the common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any set, denomination, politics, organisation, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy and neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of our fellowship in, and they'll be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the first person to share this morning is Mike. Do you want to share?
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, my name's Mike and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mike. Hi.
I was brought up in Auckland till I was 17 years of age. Came from a good family, had a good education, and my father died when I was 17, and because of that, my mother and my sister and I moved to Christchurch, where my older brother was in training to be a Catholic priest. So that's the reason that we went to Christchurch, and I remained in Christchurch for 21 years. I had my first drink when I left school at the end of that year, 1959 that was. And it took me 21 years to have my last drink. And I now know, which I didn't know then, of course, that because I had that first drink, I was destined to have many, many more. And those many, many more resulted in my life spiralling down. I had a good job for the first 10 years after I left school, but eventually I had to leave that job because of my drinking. And the types of jobs and the periods that I was employed became of less value and less period over the next 10 years. So I was just doing any old job that I could get. And many of them were living barman type jobs, which was very handy for an alcoholic, of course. And but even though I couldn't even hang on to those in the finish, and you know, I ended up in the last 3 or 4 years of my drinking, I was very, very often in the Christchurch City Mission or Salvation Army homes in Addington and Christchurch. I started to go for treatment in 1978. I think I had my first lot of treatment at the Bridge Program in Christchurch. And I did that program twice within a couple of years. I also went to Mahu Villa at Sunnyside Hospital. I was there twice in a couple of years. So in the space of 2 years or 2.5 years, I spent 1 year, 4 lots of 3 months in alcohol treatment centres. And those treatment centres were wonderful places. The people that ran them were knowledgeable, caring and loving, and they taught me all that I needed to know really about the disease of alcoholism, what was wrong with me. And a very, very important point that they told me was that their job was to tell me what was wrong with me if I wanted to know how to lead a life where I didn't need to drink. I needed to go to Alcoholics Anonymous when I left those institutions. But for some reason, unknown to me at that time and unknown to me today, I resisted that. There was no way that I would go to Alcoholics Anonymous. We went to plenty of meetings while we were in treatment, but I never voluntarily went to a meeting on the outside. And as a consequence, I never got sober. In March of 1980, I once again was resident in a Salvation Army home in Addington, and they arranged for me to go to Queen Mary Hospital at Hamner Springs. Excuse me. And on the 19th of March 1980, they took me into town. I got on a bus and I went to Queen Mary Hospital at Hamner Springs, and I remained there for 9 months. I haven't had a drink since the 17th of March 1980, St. Patrick's Day. A wonderful day for an Irish Catholic to have his last drink, I guess. Yes, I'm over 39 years sober now, and all because I finally heard that call that they told me in my first lot of treatment in 1978. When you leave this institution, you need to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I did that, what they told me was true. I haven't needed to have a drink since that time. Hasn't all been easy, but by the same token, it hasn't been terribly difficult. I've rebuilt my life. I've just recently retired. I'm 77 now, and don't look anywhere near that, but I am 77, and I've got 39 years of continuous sobriety under my belt and been able to rebuild my life. I don't need to... the only time I go near a city mission these days is when I want to contribute to them, and I do that with a great lot of love and care for what those people did for me. And it doesn't matter that I don't live in Christchurch anymore. There's city missions everywhere, and yes, I'm always available to assist those people. My experience is that doing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, cleaning out the wreckage of the past, making atonement where we can, our steps cover all of that stuff. That's what they ask us to do. They ask us to turn our will and our lives over to a power greater than ourselves. We can identify that as anything that we want to identify it as. We don't have specific gods in Alcoholics Anonymous. We just find a power greater than ourselves, try to work in harmony with that power, seek some advice from that power. Our own advice was never particularly good. And if we listen to those soft voices, which most of us would call our conscience, we really are able to clean up the wreckage of the past, to deal with the stuff that we've done or haven't done, and to atone for it where we can. And that's really the basis of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Get rid of the guilt, atone for what we've done, and start afresh. And I'm pleased to say that I was told by older sober members when I first joined that that's what would happen. And now that I'm an older sober member, I can pass on to younger members that that certainly is what happens if we just try our best. You know, there's no exams in Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't get a certificate at the end of each year. We just try on a daily basis to lead a reasonably good life, and as a consequence, you know, there's no need for us to drink. Of course, the drinking is not all about guilt. We don't drink as an alcoholic because of guilt. That may be one of the reasons that we drink. But for us, I don't know the difference between me and a non-alcoholic. I just know, and I'm told, that alcohol affects me differently to the way it affects non-alcoholics. So whether I'm guilty or whether I'm pleasurable, whether I'm happy or whether I'm sad, if I take alcohol, it's going to affect me differently to the manner in which it's going to affect the non-alcoholic. The science of that is unknown to me. I believe the science of that is unknown to most, including the scientists. But there are, as they say, rough statistics that say 1 in 5 people who drink will be affected differently to the other 4. And guess what? I'm that 1 in 5. And I didn't know that when I had my first drink as an 18-year-old. I had no intention of having a drink and ending up a drunk living in the Christchurch City Mission. That certainly wasn't my ambition. But that's the way it was. Once I was able to accept that by myself I was unable to do anything about the way that alcohol affected me, I found my way into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and came into a family that is a marvellous exhibition of love and care for each other that we have in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Today and for many years now, you know, I'm very, very pleased that I'm an alcoholic because it's given me the key to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've met in these rooms people that I probably wouldn't have met had I not been an alcoholic. I've formed relationships with people, trusting relationships, loving relationships that really are the basis of my life these days. I've been able to rebuild my life. I've been able to look in the mirror and not be ashamed of what I've done or haven't done. I just can't really fault the program of Alcoholics Anonymous when it comes to dealing with alcoholics who like me. I was the worst of the worst. I was a gutter drunk. Everything that I had, I had lost, and really there was no place for me to go. I was really without hope. I had no hope that tomorrow would be any better than today was, because I was able to go to treatment and have these things explained to me, be told where the solution lies, and eventually when I listened to that and heard that call and eventually took myself to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I built a life with which I'm more than happy, and it's a privilege to be able to share with you today.
Thanks, Mike. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship and we're sharing our experience, strength and hope about our journey of recovery from alcoholism. The next person to share this morning is Kelly. Do you want to share?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. My name's Kelly. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kelly.
Kelly.
Yeah, I grew up in an alcoholic home. I watched my parents drink and chaos erupt in our house all the time. And I would be running around in the middle of the night trying to settle everyone down and fix everything and look after my brother and, you know, like constantly trying to settle down drunk people. And, it was always uncertain. You never knew what was going to happen next. I remember walking home from school and, you know, praying to something. I didn't even know what I was praying to. I was young. But that no one would be drinking tonight, and I'd get home and they'd all be drinking. And the reason that I share that is for a long time as a child, I hated alcohol, and I never wanted to be like those people, you know. Like that's what I spent my childhood thinking, is I'm not going to be like that. I'm not going to do that. What did happen to me is at school I was exceptionally shy. I was always worried about everything. I was always feeling really isolated and different. I had no confidence. I was half mute at school, and couldn't fit in anywhere. We're really lonely, and always had an idea that no one should know about that. That's what I got taught at home, is you don't tell everyone else. And so that's how I went through. And, you know, I was really disturbed as a child. And when I was, I think, 12, someone gave me a bottle of spirits and I drank that. And from that point onwards, it was an answer. What happened to me after that was I became extremely confident, extremely loud. I wasn't scared of anything. I could fit in anywhere for a while at least. And I could go and do anything I wanted. It felt like freedom. I loved alcohol. I ran away from home and ended up living somewhere else. I put myself through school. I was able to do all of these things fueled with alcohol and with a real stubbornness, you know. And as my drinking progressed, it went from, I suppose, you know, I was always that person who ended up vanishing in the middle of the night. No one knew where I'd gone. I would start drinking, thinking that I was going to end up somewhere, and I'd end up somewhere else 2 days later. I started to drink with people who drank like me. I didn't want to be around normal drinkers. And you know, slowly as my behaviour deteriorated, what happened was I ended up around a whole lot of people who were probably quite dangerous to be around, who were in a lot of trouble, and because they were the people who accepted my drinking, and they were the people, I guess, where I didn't feel like I was different or my drinking stood out. So there's something in our literature that says that we seek out sordid places looking for understanding companionship, and I really relate to that, you know. I never knew how I got places or how my life had changed again or why I'd ended up around these people or why I'd ended up, you know, with this new problem, and I'd wake up and I'd changed my life again. And I never really knew why, but you know, alongside of the drinking was having to find people that would accept it. I used to have people, family, say things to me like, you know, why don't you just have a few drinks because you're funny at first? And a lot of people said that to me, a lot of partners over years, a lot of people said that to me. And, you know, I did try sometimes to do things like that. I did set out with the intention that I was just going to have this and then I was going to go home, or I was just going to drink here but I wasn't going to go over there. And I did sometimes spend a lot of time making little rules for myself so I got in less trouble. But what would always happen is I'd start drinking and then all bets were off. Once I started drinking, I didn't know whether the night was going to be okay or whether the night wasn't going to be okay. I used to wake up constantly and have no idea where I was, no idea who I was with, no idea where my handbag was, no idea where my car was. And, you know, the thing that really got me was in blackout. I had no experience, no feelings, nothing mattered. But often the next day I'd wake up and I'd have that terrible feeling of guilt and shame and remorse and, you know, that real fear that someone was going to tell me what had happened last night and how bad was it. And there was a real emptiness, you know, like I was really scared sometimes the next day, and have huge anxiety. And I spent a lot of time just trying to make it through that day, you know, and the only thing that ever really settled me down again was to have another drink. By the time I was in my early 20s, no one wanted to have anything to do with me. I couldn't find people to drink with. I left New Zealand. I went and found the exact same people in Australia. And the same things happened to me there, you know. I set out with a plan on a plane to not drink and to get my life together. And within 3 weeks, I was working in a pub and I was with the exact same people doing the exact same things. And, you know, something really serious happened while I was there, something really dangerous. And I had that feeling again, like I need to do something about this. You know, this isn't okay. And I left Australia and went to the UK. And I had a plan that this is going to stop and I was going to get my life together. But what happened is I had a drink on the plane. And 2 days later, I woke up in some doss house with no passport, no luggage, no idea where I was, didn't know anyone I was with, and didn't know what I'd been doing for 2 days. And that's what happened to me every time I tried to stop drinking, you know. Like, I'm a stubborn person. I would use all my will to make these plans, but I just couldn't do it. And, you know, I had relationships, not many, but one or two relationships in that time where I really wanted to be with those people. And what they'd tell me is that I needed to stop drinking. Or I needed to stop drinking the way I was drinking. And I'd make promises, you know, and I'd beg for forgiveness and I'd truly mean it at the time. But I just couldn't keep those promises. And what happened in the end was I'd say those things and I would know that they knew, that I knew, that we all knew that I wasn't going to be able to keep those promises, you know. Like, we just all knew. People had that look in their eyes. I couldn't stand it, where they just didn't believe me anymore, and I didn't believe me anymore. And, you know, I had absolutely no idea what to do. I got in trouble with the police one night. The armed defenders came to the house, and I'd done something stupid, and I was lying on a couch, and I'd boarded up the house so that no one could come and get me, and I was lying there, and I knew how mad I was. I knew there was something really wrong with me. I didn't know what it was, but I was really frightened. I knew there was something wrong with my drinking, and I knew there was something else wrong with me, and I didn't know how to even explain that. And that night, someone got me to make a call to Alcoholics Anonymous. I spoke to a woman, and what she told me about her drinking from the inside out, and all that happened was I knew she knew. I didn't want to go to AA. It sounded like a really creepy place. I'd sort of seen it in the movies, and it was all old men. chanting, and I wasn't that kind of girl, you know, but this woman, she just got me by, she knew things, she knew what it was like to wake up in the morning and you're telling everyone it's okay, but it's not. She knew what that was like. And I started going to meetings after that, and I didn't really like them. I was really suspicious of people who didn't drink. I was really suspicious that they were all still hanging around the place. But what kept happening to me was people started sharing things that I'd never been able to explain. What was really wrong with me? What was wrong with me when I drank? And what was wrong with me when I didn't drink that made me drink again? And they offered me a replacement in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what I needed. I needed to replace alcohol. And I've been going to meetings for 17 years now. I've never had a drink since that time. And what's happened for me is that I ended up doing all the things I never thought I would do in AA that they told me to do, because I knew that they were okay and I wasn't. And I've done those things, and I have a life today where I'm able to parent my child. She's 12 years old. She's never seen me drink. She's never had anything like I had in my childhood. She's had a good, safe upbringing. I've been able to work. I've been able to have relationships with people. I've been in relationships with people for a long time. That never happened in my drinking. And more than anything else, you know, I've got some freedom. I never knew what to do. I never knew what to do if I wasn't going to drink, and Alcoholics Anonymous has shown me what to do, and I'm really grateful for the life I have today. It's not perfect. Life still happens, but I've never had to pick up a drink over it, and I've never ever felt alone the way I used to ever again. So thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Kelly. You're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We had members of our fellowship in this morning sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. The last person to share this morning is Ashley. Do you want to share?
Yep, thank you. Hi, I'm Ashley. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ashley.
I am very new to Alcoholics Anonymous. Today I celebrate 6 months to the day. And I suppose my story shares as a reminder, really, of how bad it is in when you first sort of the end days of drinking, and then when you first get sober. So I had my first drunk when I was 14. That was my first blackout. And from then on, I realized that I could be this amazingly confident, courageous person, and I used alcohol to argue with people most of the time. It meant I could hold my own, and it meant that, yeah, when people annoyed me, I didn't feel embarrassed about sticking up for myself. Obviously, the next day, when I was told the extent of what I'd done, that's when the guilt and shame really set in. I had a really normal upbringing. I went to school, and then I did university, and I travelled. And my drinking was, every so often, it wasn't great, but it was all right. And it wasn't really until my early 20s that I started needing alcohol to just function at a basic level, to be able to talk to people, to be able to go out of the door and face the world just as it is. And I knew that it wasn't right, but it was a fix, and I was happy with that, so I didn't question it. I had a job where I basically had access to alcohol all the time, and I was managing there, so I'd open up at 10 in the morning and get a bottle of wine and mix that with orange juice and start the day, and I'd steal a lot of alcohol from that place to take home. And I never really saw anything wrong with it because I didn't like my boss. So I thought I was sticking it to the man. But it got worse. I started needing alcohol to go to university to finish my papers. And I started following a life plan that I thought I should do. So university, get the proper job. I had a partner who has his own addiction issues, and we moved in together, and that's when things really started spiraling out of control, because then I wasn't monitored anymore, and because he was off doing his own thing a lot of the time, I had this entire house in which to stash copious amounts of booze, and I could pass out at any time, and I didn't have to explain myself. It was great. It was, yeah, you know, I'd wake up in the morning and before work, and then I'd be a bottle of wine just to get to work, and by that time it was an office job, and I was stashing alcohol in my desk. I had my own office. I sort of, in every step, I was enabling myself, really, just to, so I could get away with everything. My family knew that something wasn't right, but that's when I really started isolating and keeping to myself. I lost a lot of friends. My relationship with my family really altered at that stage. I was lying all the time about everything, and I knew that things were just... I was starting to lose control. I couldn't control how much I was drinking. I couldn't control when I would black out. Sometimes it stopped being, you know, after a lot of alcohol, be just a few drinks, and I would just lose everything. I couldn't guess what I would do, where I would be, and so I remember we had a family holiday, and I can't really, you know, it's really hard to keep alcoholism a secret when you're living with somebody. And things really came to a head then, and I moved in with my parents for a little bit, because nobody knew what to do. We couldn't understand why I couldn't stop. I had seen my grandfather, who lived a life of alcoholism and abuse, and you know, I saw him dying in the hospital, and I it didn't stop me. And it really shows how baffling this is. And so I went to an AA meeting. I think I was still drunk. And I spent 2 weeks trying to stave off the booze, and it didn't stick. And I knew that I needed more help. And so I went into treatment, and I spent a long time in treatment, because I knew that was where I needed to be, and I need to learn how to live, because I can't manage my life on my own without booze. But it's pretty amazing that I've got 6 months now where I haven't been able to pick up, and I can just, you know I can walk in here today and talk, and I don't need to have alcohol in my system, and it's such a relief to know that, and that looking at people that have had, you know, Kelly and Mike, a lot more years up, that it can get better and it will get better, and this is the right decision.
Thanks, Ashley. You've been listening to Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. Members of our fellowship have been in sharing their experience, strength and hope about the journey of recovery from alcoholism. If you've identified with our speakers and you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can phone 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area, or you can log on to aa.org.nz, and in the drop-down box under meetings lists is a list of all meetings in the Greater Auckland area and right throughout the whole country. We'll be back here again next Sunday at 10:45 on 104.6 Planet FM with Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air, and we'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.